You're listening to the Utah Checkdown Podcast. And now your hosts, Josh Furlong and Josh Newman.
Welcome back to another edition of the Utah Checkdown Podcast. I am Josh Furlong, joined as always with my co-host, Josh Newman. Josh, you had a little bit of a weekend getaway. How you feeling? Recharged?
Yeah, you know, feeling all right. We were in Tucson for a wedding, a lot of Mexican food,
Ooh, nice.
Some friends, a lot of good times. And I'll tell you what, like 99 in Tucson is tough. I mean, I would get up, you know, we were in like an Airbnb. We would get up early and go walk for coffee. It's like 7:30 in the morning. It's tough when you walk out the front door. I don't know how anybody functions, especially from like May until like now. I just don't get it.
Yeah, that's 99 in October. That sounds dreadful. Oh man, I don't know. It's funny because like it's you know, we're coming off the bye week, and I think the bye week always serves as a great spot for obviously the team, but as media members, it serves as a great spot for us as well. We kind of need to recharge as well and kind of give a little bit of an easier break. Not that things stop, right? Obviously, we still report. Yeah. But I was kind of looking forward to it because Utah and BYU both had a bye week and made it really nice because I didn't have to edit as much, you know.
Oh, you was the sports director at KSL. I did not even think of that possibility. So good for you. I hope you got some downtime.
Yeah,
downtime.
It was different. I mean, it's funny because like I started feeling energized because it was like, okay, look, I don't have to be super hyper focused this weekend, and you know, I can focus on some other responsibilities. Like you mentioned, as a sports director, I have to handle a lot more than just as a beat writer. I kind of occupy a different role in that sense that I'm a beat writer, but also I oversee the entire sports department. So there's a lot to do there. But yesterday I got roped into an all day 10-hour meeting offsite for company leadership. And so now my bye week was just completely zapped and I'm back to where I was and looking forward to it. So I'm a little grumpy today. So
that's why they pay you the big bucks though. That's it.
It fits the topic that we're going to talk about, being grumpy. So
I think we might technically lead with that here. Don't talk too loud.
We might. So let's just, you know, let's take let's lift the curtain. Let's lift the curtain and talk about what everybody wants to talk about, and that is Cam Rising. Cam Rising, Cam Rising, Cam Rising. You know, it's funny. You know, before our podcast last week, and even before you jumped on, I was talking to Lynn Roberts as we were getting ready, and I just had to ask her, I'm like, do you get questions about Cam Rising? And she's like, honestly, I get them all the time. She's like,
really?
Yeah. She's like, it's like I'm in the room with Kyle getting my weekly update. Like, you know what? Like, what's he going to do? Like, what are you going to get from the women's basketball coach? I don't know.
Her office is in, obviously, the basketball facility, but it is like on a high floor in a far corner. You can't find Lynn Roberts. Why would she know anything about this?
Hey, it's just like the aliens. They're being hidden. Kyle is keeping him under. No, I'm just kidding.
Let's get into it.
Let's do it. All right. So we've got Cam Rising saga takes a new turn. Be ready for this. I'll let you recap this. It's been last Thursday. I'll set it up this way. Last Thursday, Cam Rising went on ESPN 700, talked about, you know, the severity of his injury and just kind of what had happened that transpired, that kind of gave us a better picture of what was going on. Since then, it's gotten even more crazy, and now that's your cue.
Yeah, so just to back it up a little further, obviously last week was the bye week, so there was no player availability, but Kyle Whittingham spoke to us on Tuesday.
Correct.
Of the bye week. I think I have that Tuesday of the bye week. And look, this is the number one topic of discussion. It's going to continue to be the number one topic of discussion for as long as Rising is out. So somebody asked about, you know, might have been Bill Riley, asked about, you know, Rising's availability, what's going on, might we see him versus Cal? And Kyle was visibly frustrated.
Yeah.
And he made it clear that one doctor, or as he joked, uno doctor, he would say one doctor, uno doctor, one doctor, they're waiting on one doctor to give Rising clearance. And that one doctor is Rising's Los Angeles-based orthopedic surgeon, Dr. Neil Eletrosh, who is the team doctor for the LA Dodgers and the LA Rams, you know, one of the preeminent orthopedic surgeons on the West Coast if not the country. So Kyle was visibly frustrated, noticeably frustrated with the situation and the lack of clearance. Fine. I wrote that. Others wrote that. Rizin goes on ESPN 700 with Bill Riley on Thursday for his weekly spot, a conversation with Cam. And Bill, you know, Bill has to ask these things, right? He didn't lead off with it. But a few minutes in, 5-6 minutes in, Bill asked Cam, how you feeling? You know, I'm paraphrasing, right? How you feeling? What's the situation? Cal, are you close? And Cam goes into his normal kind of cookie cutter, nothing vanilla answer. And then he stops himself and he went like off script and he essentially laid out how serious the injury was. Like, we've been reporting for a long time that this was an ACL injury. Rizin goes into the fact that it's an ACL, an MCL, a meniscus, and an MPFL. So he did not injure his knee in the Rose Bowl. He blew out his knee in the Rose Bowl. This was major reconstructive type of surgery.
Some of that some of that did predate this injury. So it's
some of this was last season in the first USC game, but the bulk of this was in the Rose Bowl.
Correct.
Be that as it may, he kind of, and maybe I took this too far in the story I wrote, but like in terms of Rizin and how he operates with the media, I really thought he like bared his soul a bit, and he sounded frustrated and he sounded upset and he sounded a little frustrated. How do I put this? Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm curious to hear your opinion. I think a lot of the reason why he went off script and said what he said is because he was frustrated with what, you know, with what Kyle said on Tuesday. I think maybe he was a little hurt by the notion that, oh, he's just waiting for clearance and why isn't there clearance? I think this goes a lot deeper for Cam than, you know, just your normal injury. And I think there's a lot on his plate and he really wants to come back. And he made it clear, you know, with Bill Riley that he's trying. He's trying and he's rehabbing. And yes, he is close, but, and we'll get into this. Look, Chris Camerani from The Athletic, credit to him, got Neil Elatrosh on the phone last week. And Neil Elatrosh told The Athletic that the normal recovery time for something like this for world-class athletes that Dr. Elatrosh works with, world-class athletes, you're looking at a 10 to 12-month recovery timetable. According to Elatrosh, Rizin has been on schedule, if not ahead of schedule, this entire time. So you are now looking at, we're in October. This is, what are we, almost 9 months,
we're four, 8 months post surgery? 4 days away from his 9 months of when he had surgery.
4 days away from the 9 month mark of the surgery date. So, yeah, he's close and you're ahead of schedule, but you're not. And we've said this forever. And this is what Kyle said too, and Rizin too. He's not going to get rushed back out there. He's just not going to do it. You're not going to see 80%, 85%. Neil Elatrosh is waiting until Rizin is, relatively speaking, 100% ready to go. And now we have a much fuller picture of the severity of this injury, at least publicly, that we did not have before. And the, you know, the fact that they were optimistic about him getting back for Florida was not foolish thinking, because yeah, you should be optimistic, but that really never seemed realistic.
No.
Based on what we know now.
No, I mean that was the thing. Like everybody that's seen an ACL injury in one of these athletes can kind of do the math, right? They understand that it is generally a 9 month recovery period. That's just a general basis. Some are faster, some are slower. We've talked about this. You know, it's happened. The difference is he had other factors related to this. So he had other things there that pushes it a little bit more. So that's 10 to 12 months. The problem here is I think, you know, the way that Cam was progressing, and if you read the story in The Athletic, it talks about how Cam has progressed incredibly well. There's no swelling in his knee, which is a massive indication that he is on target. I think what had happened was that he's been on pace to be able to return at, quote, a record pace based on that timeline, right? I think they expected him to be there. So this is what happens is, you know, he's given optimistic feedback that, hey, you know what, this is a standard timeline, but you're progressing. I think that gets fed back to Cam and to the coaching staff, because the coaching staff isn't necessarily getting the same information either. They're getting this information that says, okay, he's on progress, if not doing better. That leads to optimism that they're able to bring him back in for a game. You and I have talked to people that said that UCLA was always kind of that benchmark game for Cam Rizin. Florida was always kind of like high end. Hey, we're going to shoot for Florida. If he can get to Florida, so be it. That's great. The realistic possibility was UCLA. once that deadline passed, that started to put some lingering doubts into people. Obviously, Cam was practicing with the team as the first team reps and doing different things that way. But the reality is he's still in that schedule. And I think, you know, Cam is frustrated with Kyle in the sense that, you know, Kyle's trying to push him along and leaving some doubts in the public's mind that, you know, Cam isn't maybe pursuing this in a way that is fast enough or quick enough to Kyle's timeline. I don't think Kyle's trying to do that on purpose. I think Kyle is kind of left in the dark, just like you and I. As much as we want to know what Cam Rising status is, so does Kyle Whittingham. And so I think this is a situation where it's now playing out in the public in a well-intentioned situation that doesn't really need to be there, right? Like, I think they could have come out with a better timeline and said, hey, a standard timeline is 10 to 12 months, whatever that is. You know, I know Kyle doesn't talk about injuries, but in my eyes, this would have been a better situation to say, look, this is the timeline. We are optimistic to get him back at this time. This is where we're at. You know, I mean, Kyle didn't shy away from the fact that, you know, he was still optimistic towards that and Cam had to hit certain benchmarks. But I think the prevailing thought, and, you know, we wrote about it because this is what they said, that they were optimistic that they could get him back for Florida. And I think that was a huge overestimation on their part. It was a situation where if I think they could pull it back, they would. Now, they're not necessarily saying that. They're not trying to double down and say, like, we didn't do that. If anything, Kyle, you know, he recognizes that there were mistakes had. I don't want to say he doesn't want to own up to it. He just doesn't want to do it in the public light. And so that's what makes this a little difficult, is you've got a situation where now this is playing out in the public's limelight, but we still don't know anything because nobody knows anything. It's really up to Cam and his doctor's only going to clear him when he's ready.
Yeah, Rising told Bill Riley that he hasn't, and I'm paraphrasing here, that he really hasn't talked to anybody medically about the injury except for Neil Eletrosh. I think there's a bit of a lack of communication, it feels like, maybe,
yeah,
between Rising and Whittingham, or Rising and the Utah medical staff, Whittingham, whatever that looks like. Maybe there was a lack of communication. Maybe. It sounds like maybe there was. I don't have a super big problem with the early messaging from Kyle Whittingham in terms of what he was giving you publicly. You know, we said last week that, yeah, it's okay to like emit optimism publicly, because what are you supposed to do?
Well,
like,
yeah,
he wasn't going to stand up during spring practice or on the first day of camp and like rule Rising out. I don't have a problem with the optimism. Could the early messaging have been better? Yes. Does Kyle Whittingham care about that? No, he doesn't. If there was a like real lack of communication between the parties, I think that's an abject failure,
yeah,
by everybody. I think that's an abject failure by Rising to communicate with his coaching staff and the athletic department's medical personnel who are dealing with him on a day-to-day basis. I think that's an abject failure by the surgeon. If that's a factor, the surgeon dealing with the medical staff, and if the medical staff doesn't know anything, Whittingham's in the dark or Andy Ludwig's in the dark, I don't know. If that is the case, as some are pontificating, SAT word, you like that, pontificating?
Yeah. How many points did that earn you?
Yeah. if that is the case, that is an abject failure by everybody. That it was to a point where you really thought that you would be getting Rising back already, but maybe that was never the case. And if there was better communication, maybe that could have been better dealt with. I'm not saying that you like dive into the portal if you'd known, but it feels like a giant failure if that is the case. And, you know, I think one of the more fascinating factors here is that, like, yeah, you know, parts of this now are playing out publicly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because Whittingham said what he said. Whittingham is very, very even keeled. Very even keel with the media. And the fact that he kind of went away from that with us last week during the bye, I thought that was a bit surprising. And even more so, you know, Rising going on the radio. Look, Rising was a four-star kid who committed to Oklahoma when he was a sophomore at Newberry Park High School. He's been dealing with reporters and media since he's like 15 years old. He knows the deal. He knows what to say. He knows what not to say. He knows how to be very cordial, very polite with the media, answering questions without going too far. So the fact that he went off script and said what he said was mind-blowing to me. You never see that. Never see that from Cam Rising in a media scrum, very public type of setting. Now, look, Rising one-on-one, I think I've talked to Rising one-on-one maybe three or four times for stories. He's really excellent one-on-one. If you get him talking on the right topic, he's very transparent and he's happy to like let you in a little bit. But in a very public setting like a scrum or a radio show, he will dial it back immensely. So the fact that he said what he said was very surprising, and look, good for him. Like he sounded like he had a lot of conviction and it's been a long road, and he's not happy with where this thing has gone publicly. So good for him to kind of, again, like step outside of himself and try to set the record straight a bit.
Yeah. And, admittedly, these players are coached by the PR staff to be able to learn how to talk with the media, right? That doesn't necessarily mean, you know, here's the key points that you need to talk about each week. That's too far. That's more of a professional organization. But they're told how to handle themselves, not give up too much information about games or injuries or different things that way. But I don't think there was this convergence on a messaging for Cam Rising, right? I think it was more Cam Rising got optimistic feedback from the doctors. Kyle heard that optimistic feedback, and they all kind of coalesced on some form of a similar thing, like, you know, I'm optimistic to play, I'm hopeful to play, I'm going to be here to play. You know, Kyle's saying the same things. There's nothing that is inaccurate about what they're saying. They were optimistic, right? That's the thing. They were optimistic. So I don't think people were being led along. I don't think Kyle Whittingham set this tone of like, hey, you know what? We're going to tell the media this, when in reality we're screwed. You know, we don't want to do this. I think it just came to, they overplayed their cards in the sense that they thought that they could be a little bit more optimistic than they were because they expected Cam to hit the benchmarks earlier. But they didn't realize how difficult it was going to be to get somebody back that quickly, right? It's not like this is Kyle Whittingham's first ACL injury that he's had on his team, right? Obviously, somebody tears an ACL every single year. Brant Keithy, you know, for all the crap that Cam Rising has gotten, Brant Keithy has been under the radar. Nobody's talking about him. But part of that is because Kyle Whittingham.
Since camp, nothing about exactly. Keithy.
But part of that is because Kyle Whittingham doesn't talk about him. He doesn't talk about injuries. This is the one exception that Kyle has gone on and talked about injuries. And I get all the fans all the time, and it's a differing opinions on Twitter where I get so many people jump on there and they say, who cares? He doesn't have to tell you about that. Whatever. Like on the day-to-day things, I don't generally care, especially if it's not a standard thing, right? Like I don't need to know if, you know, one of these players that is a backup cornerback or something like that isn't going to play. Like at the end of the day, that's just part of the job. I get around it. I do what I need to understand it from a context standpoint. But I follow orders to some extent, right? But on something as big, follow orders.
to some extent.
I know. But like on this one, Cam Rising is bigger than them all. And this is where Kyle felt like he could dip his toe in the media a little bit and say, here's where it is. And I don't know if he regrets that and wishes he just wouldn't say anything. I don't think he could have honestly gotten away with that. But I just think this is a situation where they just overplayed their cards. They didn't know what they were doing in terms of like giving a realistic timeline for themselves, and that bit them in the butt, and now this is where we're at. We're now at a point where, you know, what is this? Week six for Utah. Well, not week six, but game six. Yeah. Where now we're still debating if Cam Rising is going to be a starter on Saturday against Cal. Let me tell you, he's not going to be the starter on Saturday. We'll get to that. But the point is, we are now this far along. If you would have said at the very beginning of the season, we don't expect Cameron Rising to be back until the middle of the season, just based on timelines alone, this squashes all of this problem, right? I'm not saying you get a transfer quarterback. I'm not saying anybody's coming in here to do this. I just think it gives a realistic expectation for your team. It gives a realistic expectation for the fans and the media, because then they get an opportunity to understand, you look, this is a tough timeline. We understand Cam's not going to be back. Anything better is gravy. But I think you've set yourself up unintentionally with failure for your team, because now last few weeks you're giving Cam Rising half the reps and projecting him as the number one guy, putting Nate out there in this late situation to say, okay, sorry, he didn't get clearance, now you're going to go be our guy. And now we're frustrated that, like, you know, Utah's offense isn't performing well. Well, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think this is going to bode confidence in the players? It's going to bode confidence in the coaching staff and in the fans. Like, this is the problem with where this is at. Whether it was an accidental mistake or not, this is where Utah is at, and they've made their own bed.
Yeah, that's well said. I will just add one thing to that, and some some fans aren't going to like this. There's definitely some fans, not all, probably not even in a majority, but some fans feel like they're owed information.
Sure.
And they feel like they are supposed to know like what's going on with this. Let me explain this as somebody who has covered college athletics for 10 or 12 years. I've covered two Power Five programs now. The fans are owed nothing. Nothing.
They pay the bills. Come on, Josh.
Come on, right? They pay the bills, right? You're supposed to know. No, yeah. The fans are owed nothing. And Kyle Whittingham's point about, if you give me, I'm paraphrasing, right? Like, what did he say Monday? If you give me one good reason to tell you about injuries, I'll tell you everything. Kyle Whittingham is never going to talk about injuries, at least not in depth like a lot of us want. There's no mandate from the Pac-12, from the NCAA. There's no mandate from Mark Harlan, the athletic director, that he needs to produce an injury report or that he needs to discuss this. They're going to keep it as close to the vest as possible. And look, I joke all the time about, Kyle Whittingham doesn't discuss injuries until he decides to talk about injuries. But seriously, he doesn't talk about injuries, and he's not going to talk about injuries until somebody makes him, whether that be the Big 12 starting next year instituting an injury report. The NCAA is never going to do that.
No.
And it's certainly never going to come from his own athletic director.
It's unenforceable anyway, honestly, from the NCAA level. It's unenforceable
anyway, exactly. And even if you were – let's say the Big 12 does go to injury reports, that's not giving you everything. All that's telling you is a guy in or out with maybe a very vague line about, upper body, lower body, like whatever.
I look forward to the day when that happens though. Like, I can't wait to see what Kyle Whittingham puts on there.
My God. There's going to be like a rock and roll reference on there somehow.
I'm here for it.
But anyway, the point being, like, look, I understand that, again, a vocal minority of fans believe that they're owed something or like want to know like what's going on inside the Eccles Football Center. You're owed nothing, and you're going to get nothing from Kyle Whittingham, and that's just what it is right now.
Yeah, and I think this is just how it's going to play out, and I don't think he's wrong. As a media member, it's frustrating, and obviously you and I try our best to be able to get it. I joked with him on Tuesday. I asked if he knew his quarterback situation Saturday, and all he said was yes. And I asked, are you going to care to tell us? And he said, he repeated his thing, if you give me a good advantage or give me a good reason to. Like, this is just where it's at. It's just fun.
And I'm going
to
ask again on Monday.
Sure.
And I'm going to ask again the Monday after that and the Monday after that, and he's going to stonewall us, and you and I are going to keep doing our jobs asking, and he's going to do his job by stonewalling us, and we're going to smile and we're going to move forward.
And the point is, we ask those to continually do that because that is our job, and also because there is that one rare instance where he doesn't talk about injuries until he talks about injuries. And
yes,
as we've mentioned, he very much so will always go a roundabout way to say, oh, this guy was banged up. And then you're like, bingo, there we are.
Great.
And that's what it is.
Happy Monday, Kyle.
Honestly, I'm fine with that relationship, right? And Kyle knows us well enough to have that play back and forth, right? It's not like this is an adversarial thing where Kyle is really pissed off at us every single day. This is, we joked even on Tuesday. If you go back and listen to the audio, I know some people have it published. There was a lot of joking, right? Like, I asked him if I should write a 5-page essay to see if I can get these injury reports. I mean, he joked about it. He can turn it, when we can turn it in. Like, it's fun. We have fun with this. I think it is frustrating to them that we asked, but that is part of our job. And Kyle is seasoned enough to understand it, right? This is just part of football, right? And especially as to me, the one area where this is changing the most and where you may see injury reports is NIL. I mean, Cam Rising has gotten a lot of money off of NIL, and that is something where not necessarily the fans, but the people that are supporting him probably are owed maybe a little bit more information. That, as well as gambling, is coming more prevalent in college football, right? And these are real-world decisions. These impact people. They have a lot of issues. These betting lines are all over the place for Utah this year simply because of Cam Rising status and the media reports and different things that way. There are real-world implications, and you can argue that they're man-made and they're different things that aren't necessarily, they don't go into the competitive balance of winning a game, and I'll agree with you, and I'll also disagree with you on those. But it's just the nature of the game. Until it happens, Kyle's not going to give it, and it's going to be the case. And I just think, at the end of the day, the messaging could have been better. Everybody understands that. Kyle understands it, whether he wants to publicly admit that or not. It's just a situation that has sucked for Utah.
This feels like a good time to remind everybody, okay, after we just went over this for like 25 minutes, this is a good time to remind everybody that Utah is ranked 16th, okay, is 4-1 and has everything on the table in front of them. I just want to put that out there. Now, speaking of having everything in front of them, let's move this forward a little bit. It's Thursday at 1:30 p.m. We are presuming Rising out at this point. What is the plan, assuming no Rising, Josh?
The official plan would be that Nate Johnson is going to be your guy, right? Like, that doesn't take anybody to question that. The reality is, though, Nate Johnson hasn't performed up to expectations. Now, he hasn't been in the situation that he should have been in, right? He's still trying to play catch up based on, you know, a torn hamstring that he had in spring, the ability to be able to get into the system. Brandon Rose was kind of expected to be that guy, and then he gets injured. So it's a situation where Nate's kind of being sped along into real game reps that don't really fit him. But until something changes, Nate is the guy. You know, Kyle had talked about the guys behind him, if they aren't able to go, is going to be Brandon Rose, who has been cleared for on-field practices. His issue is more just the speed up, right? When you're out of football for 6 or so weeks, at least in a way that you're going through the plays and you're doing different things, that makes it difficult to speed up. Then you've got Luke Batari, who is a walk-on quarterback, who actually transferred to Cal before coming back to Utah. Doesn't matter the logistics of why that happened, but he's here, he's in the system. So, and then also you have Bryson Barnes. Bryson Barnes, we honestly don't know the status of Bryson Barnes. Bryson could play, he could not. It was a serious enough injury that it took him to the hospital, but it could have been minor enough that he could even play Saturday. I don't want to rule that out, but at the same time, there's a lot of unknowns now, probably more than ever this week, simply based on we don't know the status of anybody outside of Nate Johnson. So for that reason, you probably just have to assume Nate Johnson's the guy.
Did Kyle reference Bryson Barnes on Monday when I wasn't there?
I don't believe he referenced him as a full participant. Anything, actually, Monday he said that he wasn't on the field. Or maybe that was Tuesday of last week. I don't know.
That's what I'm saying.
Two weeks blur together.
During the bye last week, somebody asked, no. We were talking about the quarterbacks, and I think, if I remember correctly, Kyle volunteered that they don't know about Bryson Barnes' status and that they would find out Monday. So Kyle did not rule out Bryson Barnes for Cal. So just keep that in the back of your mind. Okay. We're talking about, you know, if no Rising, Nate Johnson, Rose is the presumed number two after being out for 7 weeks, but don't completely rule out Bryson Barnes.
No.
If this wasn't already a circus, just don't rule out Bryson Barnes.
The crazy thing here is you got a guy that was speared, taken to the hospital. They're worrying about his literal life. And yeah, he flew home. So I don't want to exaggerate the point, right? Like, we don't need to get too hyperbolic. Another SAT word for you. Are we keeping score? Should we have a counter on the YouTube video and let people see how many points we earned?
If we don't, we should create one.
Okay, done. How many SAT points did the Newman and Josh Furlong get? I don't know. We're all over the place, just like this mess. Yep. But yeah, like the reason why you would even try to get Bryson in there is he does have a better passing ability. We have seen it, although yes, up against Baylor it was atrocious. But I still think he's got the better arm. He's got the better handle of the offense. That if he is available, I think Utah can toy around with him. It's just, we don't know, right? Nate Johnson is the guy until Nate Johnson's not the guy. Just the same as Cam Rising is going to return whenever Cam Rising returns, right? These are all unknowns, and I don't think it ultimately matters. I don't know that your offense is noticeably different with Bryson or Nate. I think there was a spark that kind of came to the game when Bryson inserted himself into the – well, not he didn't insert. He was inserted into the game.
Yes.
But that was the same with Nate when he got into Baylor. So, like, I just think they want, you know, the team wants confidence. Whoever they're rolling with the number one snaps this week, I think they're going to be fine as long as you're not switching it halfway up and doing it. I think they need a full week of game prep, if not for those last 2 weeks, and then you roll with the punches and see what you got.
You want a good indication that things are not going well?
Beyond what we've already talked about?
Well, yeah. I mean, put the Rising thing to the side. You've pulled your starter twice in 5 games.
Yeah.
Bryson Barnes got pulled against Baylor and Nate Johnson got pulled against Oregon State. Things are not going well.
If you're pulling
your starter twice in 5 weeks, I'm sorry.
What a world. Like, honestly, like going into this season, I don't want to sit here and paint a rosy picture of what Utah's quarterback situation was. Kind of similar to the running back room, and we'll get into that one as well. Just the hits keep coming. I honestly thought, you know, Brandon Rose, he was never going to be like this polished guy like Cam Rising was, but you saw glimpses of hope, and you saw, okay, in spring especially, he looked like a decent quarterback that was going to develop, and by the time fall came around, you at least have a fighting chance, right? Nate Johnson, we'd heard about his inaccuracies, and Kyle had always talked about, you know, he needs to have a little bit more, repetitive, I can't remember the phrase he uses, repetitive accuracy, that's the word, phrase. But then, you know, Brandon Rose gets injured, and it just takes all these things out, when it's just such a weird thing where all of a sudden Bryson Bard comes back, and it's like the guy that understands it. Like, this has just been the most chaotic season, and I understand the fans are frustrated as well. But what you said, Utah's 4-1. You have a number 16 ranking in the country. Everything's on the table. You beat Cal. You're 5-1 going into USC. That's a primetime game on Fox at 6 o'clock our time. You know, that's a phenomenal spot you want to be in. You can be pessimistic. You can be frustrated by it. Like, I understand it. Like,
yep.
Covering this has been very difficult for media because there's just so much vagueness and people keep getting injured that this is tough. But just enjoy it. Have fun. Don't worry about Pac-12 championship. If it's available at the end of the season, go for it. If not, just enjoy the season for what it is. You're the 2-time reigning champions. Like, this is fun.
My dude is Mr. Brightside, folks.
Mr. Brightside. Should we put on the Killers? I think we can license that. Can we do that? That'll just be our theme music as we get on every day.
You're the sports director. Work it out.
Done. I'll see. You know, I'll go workshop with their producer and see what can happen. You know, this little lowly podcast. Hey, can we use the killer soundtracks for?
Please.
Yeah, please. Yeah. Do we have to beg? Anyways, let's be done with this QB stuff. We're done for now. It's going to come back up, but let's be done for now. So let's move over to another injury. Chris Curry suffers a season-ending injury on Monday. He did something to his leg. We don't know the full extent of it, at least officially. You got a feel for the guy. He was starting to come back. The week before he started to get some reps, I talked to him, and he was so excited. You could see the smile on his face of how excited he was to get back on the field. He loved every minute. I think it was the Weber State game where the first time he got checked into the game, that crowd went wild for him. You know, he felt that. He was excited for it. He gave him kind of that juice to keep going because he still wasn't fully cleared, but he was getting there, making the progress. And then in a non-contact situation in practice, he suffers a season-ending injury. Like, this is just brutal. Like, this is now another position group that has just been hampered by injury. You know, Jaquindon Jackson has been banged up with an ankle. I talked to him this week. He seems optimistic that he's good to go. But he's been optimistic the whole time, so I don't want to paint a rosy picture there either. Yep. Jalen Glover's been the consistent one. Charlie Vincent's been out. Mekhi Bernard's lost for the season. Chris Curry's now lost for the season. This is a tough spot, right? The running backs have taken a hit. This is an obvious area where they haven't had a lot of production, and part of that is just consistency and the fact that teams are loading the box. But the fact is, you now just lost another proven guy, another guy with good pass blocking ability when he was healthy. Now you've got Jaquindon Jackson and Jalen Glover. Can Utah do this with both of them?
I mean, I'm kind of at a loss for words with that question. It's just
it shouldn't be that hard, right? Like in reality.
I mean, if Jaquindon Jackson is ramped up and is at full strength and can get through a game unscathed. Yeah, I mean, I think that bodes well, but even still, you just don't have a ton of depth there. You know, Jaquindon Jackson, when healthy, it is probably the guy that you can give it to 20 times, 22 times, and he's improved at pass pro, and he's proven that he can catch the ball out of the backfield, but he's got to play an entire game. I mean, depth-wise, you know, interesting situation between Jackson and Glover, and then you have three freshmen, none of whom have recorded a carry. Dijon Stanley has played in the last two games on special teams, not at running back. Kyle has mentioned John Randall Jr. trying to get ramped up. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, some combination of Dijon Stanley, John Randall Jr. and Michael Mitchell, are any of these guys ready to really like take on some responsibility here? Because look, if they were ready, they would be getting carries already. but they haven't been ready. So you're at a point now where I don't know that you have many more options. One of those guys has to be ready to at least provide depth if Jaquindon Jackson, you know, gets hurt again or is not his full self. I don't know that we went into this season thinking that we would be talking about this in terms of the running back room. I genuinely don't know what you're getting out of Jaquindon Jackson, but if they're going to win a football game, yeah, the defense will, you know, the defense will do what it does, what it's been doing for most of the first five games, but you need some semblance of a rushing attack. Look, a rushing attack under Kyle Whittingham, that's been a pillar of Kyle Whittingham teams. Statistically, this team is just not there in terms of rushing, right? They're eighth in the Pac-12, and I think 81st nationally. I don't have the number in front of me. I think it's like 143 rushing yards a game. That is not what Utah generally does running. So they need to get this figured out, and that might be a very difficult task just given the the losses, right? Between Mekhi Bernard, between Chris Curry, you know, Charlie Vincent, you know, non-scholarship kid, but he's a veteran guy who's been in the system. That's a guy that you can at least count on to do his job, and his status is unknown. So I, again, started this with a loss for words. I rambled, and now I'm at a loss for words again. I really don't know.
Well, and this is the thing, that if Jaquindon and Jalen remain healthy, I think they can do it, right? I think they have the ability to be able to be the guys that can help them. They're going to still need these freshman running backs to fill in times. You can't exist through a whole season with that. Even the NFL has at least three guys that they're going in, right?
Yep.
And so I think you've got to find something. Some of the freshmen, look, you can point to Ty Jordan, who had just absolutely exploded in 2020. But the realistic expectation there was he was showing that in practice, right? These freshmen aren't quite there yet. That doesn't mean that they can't produce on the field. And once they're given a shot, that adrenaline just kind of kicks in, mm-hmm. and you kind of take over. So, you know, just temper expectations if you do see them. But I do think that if Jalen and Jaquindon's can stay healthy, I think they're going to be okay. Now, with that kind of leads us to a different discussion, and that is developing a better, as Kyle calls it, the throw game, right? You have to be able to do that to be able to help this run game. The run game is what Kyle Whittingham has said has been one of the most disappointing aspects of his team this season. And that's saying a lot given, you know, all the injuries and everything. I just think part of that isn't their fault. And yeah, you can point to the offensive line that has had a lot of trouble. They haven't been as consistent as Kyle wants them to be. But part of that is also you've got guys injured on that line. You also have nine guys loaded up in the box, and Utah can't show any threat of passing it. I mean, you could put in those safeties down in the box and put them in more of a linebacker role, and Utah's still not going to throw it. That's how it's been. And so, like, all these defenses, and let's point out, too, you played UCLA and Oregon State, which are going to be two of the better defenses that you're going to face this season. That makes it really difficult. Utah just hasn't gotten a run game going. So I think if they can figure out some sort of semblance of an offense in the passing game, and we're to a point where we're talking about even just little like bubble screens, or we're talking about slant routes, curl routes, whatever it may be.
Anything to gain some momentum.
Exactly. Anything. That will relax the defense just that much, right? Like, it's not going to be a ton. They're still going to load the box until you absolutely burn them through the air. But like, it remains the most simplistic point of this whole football offense. Is they just need to develop a pass. Like, that's where it needs to be. And then I think you can see this run game explode a little bit.
Yeah. You know, the offensive line, I don't think the offensive line has played poorly as a collective unit, but certainly, not the dominant force that we thought they would be. Look, again, some of that is, you know, teams are loading up the box. That's a difficult situation. You can put some of it on, you know, I don't know, Spencer Fano is a true freshman left tackle, but I don't think he's played poorly. What is ailing this offensive line? And I think based on the two deep, I think you're going to see Jaron Kump remain at center with Johnny Maia moving to backup left guard behind Keaton Bills. What, in your estimation, is like lacking with this offensive line right now?
And you say that with Jaron Kump, and I do think it starts with him, and I'm not blaming him as like he's the guy that's making this not work. I think the difference there is Johnny Maia had a lot of experience at center. He understands the reads. He understands everything. And as much as you need a quarterback to be able to develop and understand, you know, where the guys are and understand, like, okay, are they going to blitz? Are they, are, you know, they disguising? You know, those reads have to come also from the offensive linemen. And you know, Jaron Kump has been out with injuries for the last, what, 2-3 years in some capacity, right? Like, yeah. It's been hard for him. And so he hasn't had that same experience, just legitimate playing experience, as Johnny Maia. So the fact that you haven't had him in that system, I think that also hampers it. You've got a quarterback that's not understanding it as fast that he, as he needs to. And so the two of them in kind of combination, I don't think has really allowed the offensive line to gel. They're not getting the reads as well. They're missing assignments. They're missing gaps. And that makes it really difficult. I think a lot of people just expect that, you know, an offensive line, and I'm the last person to talk about the techniques and all that with offensive linemen, but there's so much technical stuff that goes into it that, based on what the defense is giving you, that's what that center is supposed to do. They're barking out commands and, okay, here's who you're picking up. Here's what they're, you know, we're expecting to do based on however they call it out. And if there's, you know, a letdown in that or lack of experience there, that makes it incredibly difficult for a team to do it. So, yes, they've got guys that are great. You got Satolo Mea, who's been a phenomenal athlete for them. Michael Mokofisi, he's had some problems with some penalties, and maybe he's just out of sync with the line. But you've got Keaton Bills, who's great. Spencer Fano, you know, he's making mistakes. It's not like he's perfect. But he's been consistent enough that they feel like they have faith in him. This is just not working in terms of a game experience because they just haven't played together in that capacity. So I think it's just a combination of everything. The passing game has to develop. The quarterback has to be better at diagnosing what the offense or the defense is doing. The center has to figure that out and have that veteran experience to be able to understand what's going on. And all of that is just leading to Utah's offense being, quite honestly, terrible. It hasn't been great. And that's been kind of the biggest issue. So long story, it just isn't working.
You could use a pass catching tight end. Like, it would be what? It wouldn't solve all.
What? Utah's never done that, Josh.
They don't go 12 personnel, 13 personnel, never. They could use a pass catching tight end, right? They could use Brand Keithy back. I think from some, there was a bit of bloated expectations in terms of what Thomas Yasmin is or could be. Thomas Yasmin, for those who don't remember or just don't know, you know, grew up in Australia, New Zealand, Australia. Yep. Australia. No, grew up in Australia.
Now you're second guessing me. I don't know. Now I'm trying to remember.
Grew up in the oceanic portion of the world. Okay.
We're to this point of the season where I've just given up all hope. No. I don't remember.
No. The point here is grew up playing rugby and was on the verge of a professional rugby contract, decided to play American football, came to Utah. It's been a long road, learning the game. And Thomas Yasmin had this giant stretch run to end last year, right? You know, blew up the USC defense with a long touchdown run in the Pac-12 championship game, had a touchdown in the Rose Bowl. And you thought that, like, some people thought that Thomas Yasmin would be like a semi-comparable replacement until Brand Keithy's back. And that's just not the truth. Like, you can't target Thomas Yasmin or put him in different positions like you can Brand Keithy. Thomas Yasmin's got like 8 catches for 81 yards, I think he has a touchdown catch or two, but it's just, he's not Brand Keithy and he's not Dalton Kincaid and he's not even Cole Fotheringham. Okay. He's a good player, but I think the expectations on what Yasmin could be, or what the tight end room could be or should be without Keithy, were a bit bloated. That said, Kyle has spoken pretty highly of Landon King and what King is capable of. And look, if he can, you know, continue to master the playbook and do what he's being asked, he could be a factor here down the stretch if Keithy comes back, or even if he doesn't come back. So that, to me, in the tight end room, that's the guy to watch now. Not so much Yasmin. I think Landon King might be the key cog there.
Yeah, and I think Yasmin, he was always the great asset. It's not that he doesn't have the ability, but I think he got a lot of his targets based on, you know, Dalton being the decoy, right? If Dalton is the guy that everybody's going to target, as they should, because he's a phenomenal tight end, that opens up Thomas Yasmin, which is why you have the 12 personnel. Sometimes that's blocking schemes, right? Like, I get that, you know, but you get the 12, 13 personnel. It made sense to be able to use him as a decoy and then give Thomas some space. You have two talented tight ends. That works. But now that you're the number one guy and you have a quarterback that hasn't really keyed in on you well, that doesn't work. I don't know that I fully blame it on Thomas Yasmin. I just think it's that the quarterback play hasn't been there. I don't think Nate trusts himself yet to really make the passes in the ways that Utah wants him to. I think he's not yet seeing the vision of where the ball needs to go, right? It's more just like, I need to find an open guy. And so he's not finding open guys, and that causes the problem. And so he's not leading guys along or getting it. And then when you do see that he is throwing it, the receivers or the tight ends, they don't know that the ball's coming, and so that's why they're dropping the balls, right? So I think it's a combination of things. I don't, you know, we're 6 weeks into the season. We don't understand anything about this Utah offense, and that's the problem. That's the hard part.
There's no here. Identity, and I think Kyle Whittingham will tell you the same thing.
Yeah, and I think so. It's hard to make these, you know, sweeping arguments about a certain player or a certain aspect of the team when we just don't really know. I think we expect the wide receiver room to be improved this year. We've seen flashes from Mikey Matthews, obviously, but we just haven't seen it because there hasn't been a consistent enough passing game. There hasn't been enough ability there. You know, tight ends, Landon King has got it. It's still like that has to leave Utah like in nightmares watching Landon King get that pass and could have been gone for a touchdown against Oregon State.
Kyle's face was like, oh my, just incredulous that penalty happened.
It's tough, right? Like, I mean, this is where Utah's at. Like, they've shot themselves in the foot. You know, when you do have success, you find a way to get a penalty, and that just absolutely exacerbates the situation. It's just been a rough go. You know, I don't know that there's anything there that you can correct. I mean, I guess you could point to Cal, since this is kind of the preview to Cal as well. Mm-hmm. Cal is 38th in run defense, so they're going to continue to load that box, and Utah's going to continue to have struggles. But the one key factor here is they're 117th in the passing game. They give up a lot, right? Cal is dinged up as well. They're going to have a freshman quarterback, it sounds like, to start. You know, they're going to be in their own mess. Utah has the ability to be able to do this. If they can find ways to get there, I think this can be, quite honestly, this is where I'm looking at this game as kind of a breakout game. This is one of those games that you look at in a season where the entire season rests on this game. That's putting a lot of pressure on this game. But barring, let's pretend that Cam doesn't even play this year, and that's another conversation for another time. This feels like one of those games where, you know, Utah either decides it's going to find an identity and they're going to move forward, or they're just going to sink and this is going to be a season that nobody wants to talk about again.
I got a text from, let's call him a donor this morning, just shooting the breeze. And this person asked essentially, like, does Utah need to win this game to ultimately be bowl eligible if Rising is out for the season? And interesting, this person was assuming if no Rising, he was penciling in USC, Oregon, Washington as losses. And then you have to get two wins out of Cal, Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado. If Rising is out for the season, do you have to win this game for bowl eligibility?
I think it helps, obviously. I mean, that no doubt helps. Like, that gets you to five wins and you just need one more. But I think more just for the psyche of the team, you come off of a bye week. You have 2 weeks to prepare for this game. If you can't get a win this week at Rice-Eccles Stadium with the fans behind you, the defense is going to be fine. If you can't do that, like, I don't doubt that Utah can get to bowl eligibility, but I would say I'd worry more about the team's psyche and where they're at, right? Like, this team has faced a lot of adversity over the years, but they also had something to play for. They had also Cam Rising to rally around, who kind of was that central figure that rose them up. They have Cam. I don't want to pretend like he's dead, right? Or that he's moved on from the program.
But he's not in the huddle. It's a completely different dynamic.
It is, right? Like, you can have him on the sidelines, and that is just completely different. And so, like, for me, if I'm looking at this team, the only reason I think this is a must-win game for Utah is simply for that reason. Just the mindset of this team, you know, how they feel about themselves. Even, look, if this team can go over for 250 on, you know, on offense, I think that's a massive sign of respect for what they've been doing and the progress that they can make. You feel like you can make that, right? And especially if you can get 150 plus of that in the passing game. I think Utah's in a good spot. I think you've got a team that feels good about themselves. They've got a home crowd. You know, this isn't one of those games that they're going to be overlooking Cal to go play USC. No, they've got many issues on their own that before this could have been a trap game and you could have potentially had issues. But this is a game that has their attention. And I think you're kind of seeing that from the players as well. They're rallying around this. This is everything about their actual being as a player is going into this game because they understand it, right? Devon Vele came back to play football because he wanted to get better. He wanted to showcase himself that if there was even the remotest possibility of getting to the NFL, this season would showcase that. Right now, nobody's drafting him based off of what they've seen because he hasn't gotten the ball to the ways that he needs to. This means stuff to them, and so they've got to have something. This is more than just a game to them. This is like an actual lifestyle. This is something that they need for future progress.
Yeah, you know, you and I have been doing this a long time, and obviously, we've covered the last couple of Utah seasons, right, that ended with something significant. And I think we both understand and recognize like what a season-defining game is and what that looks like. I don't know that this is a season-defining type of game for Utah. But to further your point, I do think it's a little bit of a bit of a referendum on who you are and what you are and what you're made of and what you want this season to be going forward. I don't think that's unfair. Season defining, I would stop short at that, but a bit of a referendum on who you are, I think that's fair going into Saturday.
We're going to wrap up here soon, but first I want you to kind of tease what you wrote today. It's, some eight things that are kind of on your mind going into this weekend's game. These last 2 weeks have felt kind of like the off season because it feels like it's been forever. So kind of give us maybe you don't have to list off all eight, but maybe some of the things that you're thinking about going into this game.
Yeah. Right now on KSL.com and also on my Twitter handle @Joshua_Newman, right? The link is there. I essentially just jotted down late last night eight things on my mind as Utah emerges from the bye week and goes into the Cal game. Eight things, and I kind of did it, and I try to do those types of things like off the cuff and not try to overthink it. Look, eight things on my mind. Look, the quarterback, the running back situation, the offensive line. I kind of lay out the fact that like everything is still on the table. So just, again, as somebody just covering the team, eight things on my mind after what has been a kind of hectic 5 weeks going into Cal, followed by the stretch run here. So yeah, think of it as a bit of a reset for Utah football. Eight thoughts about Utah. That's KSL.com and also on my Twitter handle, Joshua_Newman.
It's a lot of, these aren't like crazy things, but they're good thoughts to think about as you're going into this game. I think they're on everybody's mind. And I think everybody wants to kind of, focus on football again. I think it's been a rough 2 weeks. There's been a lot going on. So it's good to kind of get back into the swing of things. This is the final stretch, right? Like Utah plays and they don't have a break until the end of the season. So whatever is ailing them is going to have to be fixed over these last seven games. And it's going to be a tough stretch. They've got some tough games there. So, but I'm going to, we're going to close out here now. And the last question, I've changed it. So I'm not going to ask that question that I have. But I'm going to pretend that you're Kyle Whittingham. What is your strategy to win this game? How is this game won?
Yeah, the strategy to win this game, I think it's like fairly straightforward, just like on paper, based on personnel. I think if you can, I don't think you're going to stop Jaden Ott entirely, right? For the people that don't know, Jaden Ott is a true sophomore running back at Cal. Is number two in the Pac-12 right now in rushing with 558 yards in five games, which obviously means he's averaging over 100 per game. If you can like limit Jaden Ott, and you can keep him contained and make Fernando Mendoza throw the ball. Fernando Mendoza opened this season as Cal's third string quarterback. He will start for the first time in his career. He has one career pass attempt. That was in the opener against North Texas. If you can make Mendoza beat you, I think that's a recipe for success. Now, I was on ESPN 700 with Bill Riley earlier today, and he kind of compared it to the UCLA game where like you were trying to make Dante Moore beat you. Mm-hmm. The difference there is Dante Moore didn't have Zach Charbonnet or anything close to him in his backfield.
No.
Mendoza's very green, but Mendoza has a very legit running back in Jaden Ott to take some of the pressure off. If you can limit Jaden Ott and keep him contained. You're not going to stop him entirely. He's too good. But if you can contain him and limit him and put the ball in Mendoza's hands, I think that Morgan Scalley is capable of having a field day in terms of what he wants to call with pressure and blitzes and exotic stuff and letting some of his guys loose. If you can do that and get a little bit of offense, just like you got against UCLA, if you get a little bit of offense and your defense shows up, I think Utah's going to be fine. Maybe not covering 13.5, but you're going to be fine. Yeah, I put that in there just for the gamblers.
I love it. You and I have gotten one fan that has been so mad that we said the opening line started at 10 and it's really 13.5.
That dude has two followers. I don't know who he is.
I know. I just, people, man, like it's a game. Deal with it. Anyways, I agree with everything you said, and I'm going to kind of bypass it, even though you mentioned everything and I agree with it. But I think Utah's defense is in a good spot where they can nullify to some extent what Jaden Ott does. Now, he's going to get his yards, right? Like, I don't want to pretend that he's not. But I think for me, the game-winning strategy has to be develop a better passing game, right? And I don't know if that means Kyle has to allow Andy Ludwig to open up the playbook a little bit and just say pass it a lot more. Running the game, especially with how injured that position group has been, I don't think that's the strategy. I think you have to have it, right? Like they're going to develop that and they're going to have a lot of runs. That's a Utah staple. But I think Utah has to get closer to that 200 yards passing for this to work. Now, it's Cal, so I don't know it has to be there, but I think you have to get closer to that line, right? I think if the passing game can develop this week, I think Utah has a good strategy to win. If not, it's going to be another grinded out, really low scoring game. Utah should still win, but like you can't take anything for granted when you got Jaden Ott on the other side of the ball. So, we'll take different sides of the coin here, but I think they're both relevant, and I think we both agree that that's what's there. So, I don't know. It'll be an interesting game. I don't think Utah is overly worried, but I think it's more just looking at the projection of what this team can be. Right? I don't think that you're going into this game like the Oregon State game worried that, you're going to lose. I think there's a lot of optimism. I think this is a good get right game, if it can be a get right game. So, be optimistic. Go have fun. These games are going to be here that much longer, and then you're stuck in the offseason dealing with conference realignment and who's going to be the quarterback next year. Good luck.
I can't wait to see who plays quarterback Saturday. I can't wait.
All right. Well, with that being said, we're done. You got anything more?
I started my week in Tucson, Arizona, where it was 99 and sunny, and it's now 60-ish and rainy. Tell you what, I think I prefer the 60 and rain.
It's beautiful.
I'll be honest.
Like, I don't need persistent rain. Like, I don't know that I could live in a climate where it just rains all the time. I have lived in a climate where it rains all the time, and it's fine. But I love this. I love just kind of the down days. I put on my sweatpants. I'm all for comfort. So
look, I dressed my kid up in sweats and a hoodie on the way to daycare. I'm looking at him like, you look really cute today. So there's another reason for it to keep raining and be chilly.
See, it's a win-win for everybody. All right, well, let's sign off. We've had enough fun, and I'm sure you're tired of talking about Cam Rising and the quarterback situation. So we're gonna be done.
Later, well, anyways, guys.
Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate all the support that you guys give us and for the opportunity to do this. But once again, if you ever have any questions for us, don't hesitate to reach out. Josh obviously does his mailbag, and those are great assets to be able to have to fill a good mailbag. So hit us up. We appreciate any feedback that you have. But checking out tonight, and we will see you Saturday, right? Peace out.